Good morning. Welcome to the July 8th, 2025 regular meeting of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority Board. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday weekend. I am Commissioner Myrna Melgar, chair of this board. Our vice chair is Danny Sauter. The clerk today is Amy Sa Young, and I would also like to acknowledge James Kawana at SFGov TV for staffing this meeting. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll and then make your announcements?
Commissioner Chan. Chan absent. Commissioner Chen. Chen present. Commissioner Dorsey. Dorsey present. Commissioner Ingordial. Ingordial present. Commissioner Fielder. Fielder present. Commissioner Mahmood. Mahmood present. Commissioner Mandelman. Mandelman present. Chair Melgar.
Present.
Melgar present. Vice Chair Sauter. Sauter present. Commissioner Sherrill. Sherrill absent. Commissioner Walton. Walton absent. Chair, we have quorum. Also, for members of the public interested in participating in this meeting, we welcome your attendance here in person in the Legislative Chamber, Room 250 in City Hall. Or you may watch cable channel 26 or 99 or stream the meeting live at sfgovtv.org. For those wishing to make public comment remotely, the best way to do so is by dialing 415-655-0001 and when prompted, entering access code 2660-333-6001 and then press pound and pound again. You will be able to listen to the meeting in real time. When public comment is called for the item you wish to speak on, press star 3 to be added to the queue to speak. Do not press star 3 again or you will be removed from the queue. When the system says your line is unmuted, the live operator will advise you that you are allowed 2 minutes to speak. When your 2 minutes are up, we will move on to the next caller. Calls will be taken in the order in which they are received. Best practices are to speak slowly, clearly, and turn down the volume of any televisions or radios around you. Public comment for items on this agenda will be taken first from members of the public in attendance in the Legislative Chamber, and then afterwards from the remote speakers queue on the telephone line. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We are expecting Commissioner Walton. He's just running a little bit behind. Before calling in the next item, as chair, I'd like to invoke Rule 3.26 from the Rules of Order to limit total public comment per item to 30 minutes for today's meeting. Each speaker will have 2 minutes to speak on a given item. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 2, approve the minutes of the June 24th, 2025 meeting. This is an action item.
Thank you. I note that Commissioner Chan has joined us. I don't see anyone on the roster with questions or comments for this item. That being the case, let's go to public comment, please.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 2? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no public comment.
Okay. Seeing no other speakers, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, may I have a motion to approve the minutes? Mandelman, seconded by Commissioner Chen. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
On the motion to approve item 2, Commissioner Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. Commissioner Chen. Chen, aye. Commissioner Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Commissioner Ingordial.
Aye.
Ingordial, aye. Commissioner Fielder. Fielder, aye. Commissioner Mahmood. Mahmood, aye. Commissioner Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Vice Chair Sauter. Sauter, aye. Commissioner Sherrill. Sherrill, absent. Commissioner Walton. Walton, absent. There are 9 ayes. The minutes are approved.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Let's go to the next item, please.
Item 3, Community Advisory Committee report. This is an information item.
Okay, we have our CAC committee chair, Kat Siegel, on remotely. Welcome.
Hi, good morning, Chair Melgar and commissioners. At our June meeting, the CAC approved the fiscal year 25-26 Transportation Fund for Clean Air Program of Projects. Although several members provided feedback about difficulties they've had while using the Emergency Ride Home program, and members requested usage statistics for the program as follow-up. Both of which have been themes in past CAC discussions around funding for the Emergency Ride Home program. We approved the Walter U. Lum Place Public Space Study with members giving positive feedback on the chosen design recommendation. And we voted to support the contract with SiteLab for the Geary Fillmore Underpass Study, with several members expressing appreciation for the Transportation Authority's efforts to repair harms to Black neighborhoods caused by urban renewal, celebrating this as a success for the city. We also approved the Prop L and Prop AA fund allocations for 6 requests. We were appreciative that Director Wise came to present to us on the decision to pause the application-based traffic calming program and to provide context for the allocation requests for the fiscal year 21, 22, and 23 cycle of projects. The CAC has had a lot of questions about this program throughout this year's budget process. The CAC was generally supportive of the decision to pause the program and SFMTA's proposal to focus on a proactive rather than reactive approach to traffic calming. The CAC encouraged focusing on the high injury network and incorporating other traffic collision data in the absence of applications. The CAC ultimately voted to support the TNC tax fund programming and allocation items for this program, with the programming action passing unanimously and 2 members opposing the allocation action. Finally, we received an update on the I-280 southbound Ocean Avenue off-ramp project, with several members familiar with cycling and driving conditions in the area urging bolder action to improve safety, such as removing a lane of automobile traffic to allow for a concrete protected bike lane, extending the protected bike lane further down the road, and removing the proposed double turn lane from the design, citing the city's commitment to remove double turn lanes after the 2023 fatality at 4th and King. Thank you so much, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much, Chair Siegel. I don't see anyone on the roster with questions. Madam Clerk, let's open this item up for public comment, please.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 3? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. There is no remote public comment.
Okay, thank you. Public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, let's go to item number 4, please.
Item 4, state and federal legislation update. This is an action item.
Welcome, Mr. Reyes.
Good morning, Commissioners. Martin Reyes, Principal Transportation Planner for the TA. For this month's legislative report, we're recommending 1 new support position, and we'll also provide an update on the state budget, as well as the Regional Transportation Revenue Measure Bill, SB 63. I'll try to move through this quickly. I know you have a lot of items ahead of you. First up, we are recommending a support position on Senate Bill 572 from Senator Lena Gonzalez. This is related to crash data for partially autonomous vehicles. Right now, the federal government collects crash data for both partially and fully automated vehicles. This bill would serve as a backstop to make sure that the state continues to receive crash data from manufacturers in the case that federal reporting requirements are repealed. It would solely apply to partially automated vehicles, since the DMV already collects its own crash data for fully autonomous vehicles. Our second item in this update is on the state budget. Late last month, the governor and the legislature came to agreement on and passed an updated state budget. There were a couple of pieces of good news on the transportation front we wanted to highlight for you. First off, the $1.1 billion in statewide transit cuts that were previously included in prior budget proposals were reversed. And this reversal preserves funding that was committed in previous budget cycles that is helping to sustain Bay Area transit at this very moment. The budget agreement also approved $750 million in loans to Bay Area transit agencies, including Muni and BART, to help sustain transit service until a regional revenue measure authorized by Senate Bill 63 can be placed on the ballot in 2026. Specific terms for the loans are still in development, and we'll bring back some updates on this in the coming weeks. And the last item in my update and the meatier update in all of this is on Senate Bill 63, which is the Regional Transportation Revenue Measure, a bill led by Senators Wiener and Aragin. The Senate Bill 63 Working Group, which consists of county transportation authorities from the five counties, San Francisco, Alameda, Contra Costa, San Mateo, Santa Clara, have been meeting over the last few months to provide technical assistance to the bill authors as they craft an expenditure plan for the regional measure. The working group has been exploring various issues, such as funding targets for the operators named in the bill. There are four of them, AC Transit, BART, Caltrain, and Muni. We've also been looking at different methods to help demonstrate how funding deficits for each of those operators could be attributed to each of the five counties. The working group expects to wrap up its work in the next few days, really shortly, and based on that work, the senators are expected to draft and release an expenditure plan for review by the region later this month. In response to that, we may bring an information or action item to the second board meeting this month with more information. Other counties are also actively discussing this bill, so I wanted to touch on what's happening with San Mateo and Santa Clara counties. Both of those counties actually need to decide if they want to be in the measure by August 11. By default, the counties of San Francisco, Alameda, Contra Costa are already included in the measure, but San Mateo and Santa Clara must opt in by August 11. Both SamTrans and VTA, which are the agencies representing the two counties in these negotiations, have been conducting polling. They've also been having board discussions over the last few months, and they have meetings scheduled in the first week of August to take action on this issue. I did want to quickly highlight that SamTrans had a very positive board meeting last week, where MTA Director Julie Kirschbaum provided a presentation going over how MTA is trying to attract more riders, improve efficiencies, and identify new revenues to address their funding shortfalls. Her presentation had a highlight on how Muni serves San Mateo specifically, and according to her presentation, about 10% of the boardings, all boardings, transit boardings that take place in San Mateo, 10% of those actually take place on Muni, with the other 90% consisting of SamTrans, Caltrain, and BART. They also went over SamTrans polling results, which generally indicated support from their voters for participation in a regional measure. And SamTrans's staff presentation also outlined potential contributions from their county in a regional measure to operators, including BART, Caltrain, as well as Muni. And with respect to San Francisco, Senate Bill 63 stipulates that we can participate in the regional measure at a minimum sales tax rate of a half cent, or we could opt up to a higher rate of one full cent. San Francisco has to also indicate its desired sales tax rate by August 11. Outside of the five county discussions, MTC has also been discussing the regional measure specific to the up to 10% set aside for what we have previously referred to as transit transformation. In June, the full MTC Commission endorsed a $45 million annual high-level expenditure plan for this set-aside, consisting of rider-focused improvements that draw on items from the Transit Transformation Action Plan. And their draft expenditure plan includes things like $25 million for fare programs, things like Clipper Start, $10 million for accessibility programs like one-seat paratransit rides, and $10 million for transit priority and mapping and wayfinding. MTC is leaving room to make adjustments to their proposed expenditure plan in acknowledgement that the funding amounts for this set aside will change over the next few weeks as the legislative process continues. The last thing I wanted to highlight is that yesterday the bill passed out of the Assembly Transportation Committee. It passed on an 11-4 vote, with the no votes largely coming from non-Bay Area representatives. Julie Kirschbaum, MTA director, also provided testimony in support of SB 63 at yesterday's committee meeting, and Jesse Kaler was there to represent our agency to provide comments in support of the bill as well. The bill is now headed for the Assembly Revenue and Taxation Committee next week. We expect things to move very fast over these next few weeks, and so we'll be bringing regular updates to this board as we go. That is the end of my legislative update. I did just want to give a quick reminder that this is an action item, and staff is proposing a support position on Senate Bill 572 related to partially autonomous vehicles. With that, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ray. So I just wanted to provide a couple comments. I, first of all, want to say thank you and to TA staff. I think our staff has done the heavy lifting in the region by being creative, crunching the numbers, providing technical assistance to this whole effort, which has required quite a bit of negotiation with our regional neighbors. I want to also say thank you to Alicia Jean-Baptiste at the mayor's office, who has also done really heavy lifting in the whole effort. She's my other colleague that is on the MTC commission. We have been following and supporting all of the negotiations and activism that has been going on in both San Mateo and Santa Clara counties. There is a really robust effort among transit riders, working class people, people who use transit in both San Mateo and Santa Clara County to get this to the finish line. I am not overestimating how important this is for our region. If we don't have Muni, BART, Caltrain, SamTrans, as well as AC Transit, all of the things that connect workers to jobs and students to opportunities, the economy of our region will just not work. And so I am really happy that people are working together. We're still not there, but you know, the efforts are well on their way and everybody understands how important it is. So colleagues, I beg you to stay tuned, stay involved, pay attention to what's going on in our San Francisco Bay Area and how we're all interconnected. And again, thank you so much, Mr. Reyes, for your hard work. It's the TA staff has done way above, lifted way above their weight in terms of the amount of work that has gone on to this effort. So thank you so much. I don't see anyone else on the roster, so let's go to public comment and then you know, vote on this action item. Thank you.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 4? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. There is no remote public comment.
Okay, public comment on this item is now closed. Colleagues, we need to take action on support of Senate Bill 572. If I could have a motion, please, by Mandelman, seconded by Commissioner Dorsey. Please take a roll.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. On the motion to approve item 4, Commissioner Chan.
Aye.
Chan, aye. Commissioner Chin. Chin, aye. Commissioner Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Commissioner Ingordio.
Aye.
Ingordio, aye. Commissioner Fielder.
Aye.
Fielder, aye. Commissioner Mahmood.
Aye.
Mahmood, aye. Commissioner Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Vice Chair Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. Commissioner Sherrill. Cheryl absent. Commissioner Walton?
Aye.
Walton, aye. There are 10 ayes. The motion is approved.
Thank you so much. Madam Clerk, let's go to item number 5, please.
Item 5, approve the fiscal year 2025-26 Transportation Fund for Clean Air Program of projects totaling $723,264 with conditions. This is an action item.
Welcome.
Good morning. I'm Mike Pickford, Principal Transportation Planner with the Transportation Authority. And SFGovTV, I do have slides, which I believe are shared. Or do I need to share them? Yes. OK, looks good. Great. So the Transportation Fund for Clean Air is funded by a $4 surcharge on motor vehicle registrations in the Bay Area and is intended to fund projects that improve air quality by reducing motor vehicle emissions. 60% of TFCA funds are managed by the Air District for regional grant programs, and then 40% of TFCA funds are managed by the counties, with the Transportation Authority managing the program here in San Francisco. As the TFCA manager, the Transportation Authority typically programs about $700,000 annually to projects, and we assist sponsors in pursuing those regional funds. For this year's call for projects, we had about $680,000 available after netting out administration funds, and by the deadline, we received 4 eligible applications. All the funds need to be programmed by November, or we risk losing the funds. To develop our recommendations for this competitive program, we first evaluated applications based on screening criteria required by the Air District. As mentioned, all TFCA projects must fit rules and eligible project types and must meet cost-effectiveness thresholds established by the Air District. Air District policies do not include prioritization guidance, but our local expenditure criteria approved by the board in February instruct us to prioritize applications by looking at factors including project type, emissions reduced, project readiness, and project readiness, which is especially important as TFCA projects are expected to be completed in 2 years. The local expenditure criteria prioritize project by type with zero emissions non-vehicle projects as our top priority, followed by shuttles and then vehicle projects as well as any other eligible projects. Here are the 4 applications we received. We recommend fully funding 3 of the projects and partially funding 1, which I will get into. I'll briefly describe each project, and I just want to note that we will also review conditions that we're recommending for the Treasure Island bike share expansion and fleet electrification projects, given concerns that we have about project readiness and the lack of fully secured funding at this point. So first up, SFMTA's short-term bike parking project would plan, design, and install 734 new bike racks, providing an additional over 1,400 bicycle parking spaces. Locations for the bike racks are selected by request and proactively, including by SFMTA project managers. You can see a link on the slide there if you would like to request a bike rack. Project managers also are working on corridor projects and in high demand areas. There's a map of recently installed racks in your packet. Partial funding is recommended for this project so that we can fund other projects by scaling this project back. And additional rack locations would be eligible for this call for projects next year. Next, the Treasure Island Bike Share Expansion Project from TIMA would support 2 years of bike share operations on Treasure Island and Yerba Buena Island. The project intends to leverage over $300,000 from the Treasure Island developer that would be used to install 5 new bike share stations and a total of 60 bikes that would be strategically placed across the islands. The project directly responds to community feedback collected in the Treasure Island Supplemental Transportation Study, which emphasized the need for more sustainable and accessible transportation options. Pending funding and contract execution, the expanded bike share service would launch in spring 2026. As I mentioned, we are recommending a special condition that by the end of February 2026, TIMA must provide documentation confirming the project is fully funded, such as a grant agreement. And that if that is not received, the Transportation Authority may cancel this project and reallocate the funds through next year's call for projects. Next, from SF Environment, Emergency Ride Home incentivizes commuters to use sustainable commute modes by providing a subsidized taxi ride home in case of a personal emergency, like a sick kid or a flat tire on your bike. We've supported this program for a number of years because it is a cost-effective use of TFCA funds. The requested funds would support 12 months of program operations. In this cycle, SF Environment plans to expand outreach in Spanish and Cantonese-speaking communities, particularly parents, guardians, and affordable housing residents who are often underserved, to increase their awareness and participation. And then our final recommended project comes from a nonprofit, Project Open Hand, that delivers meals to sick and vulnerable people around San Francisco. They are requesting TFCA funds to install 8 electric vehicle chargers and related infrastructure to support transitioning their delivery fleet to electric vehicles. The TFCA funds would leverage $32,000 from PG&E for the chargers. Project Open Hand has also secured $350,000 in federal funds for at least 4 electric vehicles, and they have pending grant application for an additional $350,000, which would secure another 4 vehicles, which would allow them to fully utilize the chargers. We're recommending a special condition for this project as well, since no air quality benefits would accrue without those vehicles. The Transportation Authority would reimburse Project Open Hand for the eligible charger costs once Project Open Hand provides evidence that they have procured a corresponding vehicle. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions, and we do have project managers available as well.
Commissioner Dorsey.
Thank you, Chair Melgar. I just wanted to express my thanks to staff and everybody at CTA for working on finding alternative funding sources to some of the programs that would have been funded in the Treasure Island Connects program, including something that I'm personally excited to see, which is bike share on Treasure Island. I really appreciate this recommendation. I'm happy to support it. As many of you may recall, last fall, the Chronicle reported that San Francisco surpassed its record for its citywide bike share program, the Lyft Bay Wheels program. This is a surging, there's surging demand for this mobility option. It is very increasingly popular in San Francisco, and one frustration that I know many of the Treasure Island residents have is that the only neighborhood in San Francisco that has been without it is Treasure Island. So I think this is something that's going to be welcomed, and there's going to be a lot of excitement about it. I'm looking forward to it. It means a lot to the neighborhood, and it means a lot to me. So I just wanted to say thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Dorsey. I knew you were going to be really excited about this one. Commissioner Sauter.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to quickly add a little bit of urging around for the bike parking. I think working with MTA, I'd like to see as many of these as possible be placed in the areas that we're doing the daylighting. I think it's two benefits in one to have the bike rack and the daylighting in the curb. Otherwise, I think we'll continue to see what we're seeing right now, which is that we're painting a lot of these curbs red, which is good, but the enforcement has been pretty watered down and pretty weak, and so we're having cars continue to park there, which diminishes the point in the first place. So let's get two benefits in one. I'd like to see us put as many of those bike share racks, the bike racks on the corners, daylighting intersections, and providing parking, bike parking on those corners. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Sauter. I do have a couple questions on to Commissioner Sauter's point. I'm wondering, perhaps this is more of an MTA question, of what is needed for that, the sort of prioritization of installing bike racks in the daylit areas. Is there a permitting system that doesn't exist yet that you need? Do you need legislative action? What is it that's needed in order to prioritize that?
I think we have a colleague from SFMTA who can respond to that question.
Thank you. Hi, Mr. Lung.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. We have been installing more proactive corrals in daylighting before the Senate Bill 423. Sorry if the number escapes me at the moment. However, we are intending to do more, as the supervisor has suggested. One thing that would streamline it is a modification of the transportation code, which would adopt some of the state bill language to say, hey, go ahead and do this. At the present, we still have to say, we have to legislate each corral in the daylighting and say, hey, bike, this is designated bike parking, even though it's also red zoned. So we're hoping to do that soon. That has continuously been put on hold in the past because of concerns about parking impacts with daylighting. And as you know, recently, this increase from 10 feet to 20 feet was very exciting, which will allow us to do more with bike parking overall.
Okay, thank you so much. Hold on, because my next question is also for you. The condition for the bike share grant for TIMA, I am super excited. So I was actually on Treasure Island on Saturday with my daughter, and we went to Mercy for lunch, which is great, but it's a little bit of a trek from the ferry terminal. And so it would have been so awesome to have, a bike share. I thought of you, Commissioner Dorsey. I remember there was a bike rental business on the island before the pandemic, and if I remember correctly, she was a nonprofit. I may get that wrong, but there's a really great need. If the matching funds don't materialize, can these funds be used for something else that will also result in bikes being available to the public?
I can't answer for the TIMA administration. However, I can say that MTA will do whatever we can to support that.
The bike lanes are great.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned the nonprofit before. That is one of the other options that we've said, hey, maybe this could be a different form of bike supply on the island, not necessarily, what would it look like if it wasn't the station-based bike share that we're used to in the city? So we have been brainstorming around that to see, you know, how else can we do this? It is a very unique and fortunate opportunity, so we're excited about it.
Maybe Mr. Pickford knows, if these funds, these air district funds, can be used if the plan doesn't materialize?
I would say two things. The air district policy does require that our current bike share system has essentially a first right of refusal to be the operator for the program. So that's one part of it. And then the second part, we could modify the funding agreement, but it might be simpler to just have a new project that we really are thoughtful about and have apply for next year's call for projects.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, I don't see any other names on the roster. I think we can do this motion and then same house, same call. Oh, I'm sorry, yes, we do need public comment on this item.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 5? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comments and going to our first caller. Hi, caller. Your 2 minutes begins now.
All right. Thank you very much. Good morning, supervisors, commissioners. My name is Alex Landsberg, Research and Advocacy Director for the Electrical Industry here in San Francisco. I'm calling specifically about the award to Project Open Hand. I'm glad to see community service organizations electrify their transportation systems. What I did want to note in reviewing all the documents on your website is that there's nothing indicating that this work needs to be done with prevailing wages. And my understanding is, and I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, that because there are state funds involved in this, even though the city is or the county is passing them through, there should be an EVITP, so electric vehicle infrastructure training program requirement for the installation of these chargers. And I would hope that that would be reflected in the transportation authority's documents. In my review of at least what was submitted in the agenda packet, it indicated that some estimates were provided by a facility service company to Project Open Hand. So we want to make sure that it's a solid electrical contractor, ideally one of our local SFECA contractors, and that the work is done by properly trained, certified electricians. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. There is no additional public comment.
Okay, with that, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, may I have a motion to approve this item, please, in a second? Mandelman, seconded by Mahmoud. And I think we can take the same house, same call. Okay, the motion's approved. Thank you. Let's go to item number 6, please.
Item 6, adopt the Walter Ulam Place Public Space Study Final Report. This is an action item.
Morning, commissioners.
Welcome.
Hi, I'm Alex Pan, Transportation Planner, SSF TV. I'm sharing slides. Okay, so today I'm presenting the final recommendation for the Walter Ulam Place Public Space Study. This study was requested by former Commissioner Peskin and funded by the Transportation Authority's Neighborhood Program to examine various scenarios for a people-first Walter Ulam Place and develop an urban design strategy to cohesively connect the alleyway with Portsmouth Square. The study also builds on recommendations from the Transportation Authority's 2020 Portsmouth Square Community-Based Transportation Plan. The study recommends a concept design that responds to community input, addresses trade-offs between pedestrian and loading access, and could be compatible with the timeline of the upcoming Portsmouth Square renovation. We contracted with the Chinatown Community Development Center to conduct outreach. This included convening a 7-member steering committee of merchant and organizational stakeholders. The steering committee provided feedback on the study approach and recommendations. Outreach activities included surveys in English and Chinese, community meetings, pop-up events, and merchant focus groups. The first round of outreach helped identify community priorities and preferences for design elements to include in the alleyway design. In the second round of outreach, we shared three potential designs with the community and used feedback to refine the design concept. The project team developed three potential designs based on technical analysis and round one outreach findings. The designs were intended to test physical solutions for the alleyway and address parts of the street that were out of compliance, including the cross slope of the sidewalk and substandard width of the cut-in loading zone, as well as to get feedback on community interest in different design features. Designs were also constrained by the steep grade of the street, drainage requirements, limited street width, and the timing and design of the planned renovation of Portsmouth Square, which is being led by the Recreation and Parks Department. The project team, which included staff from Public Works and SFMTA, arrived at the recommended concept based on feedback from outreach and the steering committee. The recommended concept positions the alleyway as part of the Portsmouth Square plans and enhances pedestrian safety and connectivity while also providing loading access. The sidewalk on the west side has been widened to 13 feet. To provide an ADA accessible grade on the sidewalk, the design includes a low retaining wall, which is split into a stepped curb. So in the top photo on the right side, you can see how there's two steps from the street level up to the sidewalk level. The first step can be used as a planting area or as an open area for walking and seating. Handrails on the steps provide an opportunity to introduce art or decorative elements. The overall street width is narrowed to 18.5 feet, providing a single lane of traffic and a continuous 8-foot wide loading zone at the curb. To enhance connections to Portsmouth Square, there's a raised crosswalk at the Clay Street corner that aligns with the new pedestrian plaza at Portsmouth Square. The design also uses common paving materials and paving pattern to the Portsmouth Square design. The design also includes the option for temporary street closures with the addition of poles or bollards that can be used to temporarily close the street to vehicle traffic. Art, culture, and historical markers can be introduced through street furnishings. The final report includes a discussion of detailed design and construction cost estimates, potential funding sources, and next steps for implementation. The detailed design phase recognizes the need for a parking and loading management strategy, which should be led by SFMTA, to address community concerns that removing the cut-in loading zone and shifting loading to the curb would have congestion and loading impacts in the alleyway. The cost for detailed design is estimated to be $870,000, and the conceptual planning level estimate of construction costs is $4.35 million. Finally, there's an opportunity to coordinate the Walter Ulam Place project with the upcoming renovation of Portsmouth Square. This option would save time and money and minimize construction impacts. This option requires detailed design funding to be secured by December 2025 and construction funds to be secured by September 2026. That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions, and I believe we also have Katie Taylor, landscape architect from Public Works online, to take questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Pan. I see Commissioner Sauter on the roster.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Pan, just want to appreciate your work on this and all of your team's efforts. It is a unique setting that you're working with there, where you have an active alleyway and roadway with all the loading and the merchants right there. But then on the other side, of course, you have the park. And so I think what you've done here really balances all those needs well. And I know there's a lot more to come with the follow-up and the follow-through here. And I think we have a chance to have this complement all of the amazing work that's happening next door at Portsmouth Square. And I look forward to continuing to work with you to get this done. Thanks.
Okay, thank you so much. Really great planning and design work. Thank you. Let's go to public comment on this item, please.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item six? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, can I have a motion to approve this item, please? Commissioner Sauter, seconded by Commissioner Mandelman. Madam Clerk, I think we can take the same house, same call.
Yes.
Okay, that motion is approved. Same house, same call. Thank you. Let's go to item number seven, please.
Item seven, allocate $2,441,000 and appropriate $100,000 in Prop L funds with conditions, and allocate $2,360,572 in Prop AA funds with conditions for six requests. This is an action item.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We have Amelia Wally here, Senior Program Analyst, to present on this item.
Good morning, Chair Melgar and Commissioners. As of Gov, I'm sharing my slides. So we have several requests for Prop L and Prop AA funds. Most of these are sort of annual programmatic allocations, and we'll start with our first request from Public Works. This is for about $1.1 million in Prop L funding to construct 30 curb ramps at 7 intersections in Districts 2, 5, 6, and 10 as part of their Curb Ramps Various Locations Number 18 project. The project meets the city's obligations under federal and state accessibility statutes, regulations, and policies to provide curb ramps that are readily and easily usable by people with disabilities. Locations are primarily identified through public requests and public works inspections. And I'll just note that one of the intersections for the project, which is at Ashbury and Frederick, does include overhead contact system work. So during construction at that location, the Muni overhead wires will be locally de-energized daily for up to 7 days and will be coordinated with SFMTA. The full list of locations can be found in the packet materials. Next is a request for $586,000 of Prop L funding toward repair of public sidewalks and curbs at about 200 locations, not due to tree damage. This is from Public Works. Damage at these locations is typically caused by trucks driving up on curbs, old age, vehicular accidents, etc. Locations are determined by inspections and public complaints, and they're prioritized based on readiness, community support, and time-sensitive urgency. And then we have a request for $400,000 of Prop L funding from Public Works for street repair and cleaning equipment. So requested funds would be used to purchase a new full-size street sweeper to replace one that's exceeded its useful life. The replacement is diesel-powered, but is California Air Resources Board compliant and meets the current emissions standards. Next is a Prop L request from SFMTA for $200,000 to provide bicycle safety classes and safety outreach across San Francisco with programs and materials offered in multiple languages and in a culturally competent manner. SFMTA expects to offer at least 68 bike classes and reach 12,000 people through outreach with the goal of supporting the increased use and safe use of bicycle facilities in the city. There are a couple special conditions on our recommendation, which include SFMTA's certification of eligible contractor expenses and a program evaluation that includes certain key metrics related to demographics and program outcomes. And the last Prop L request would provide $100,000 to the Transportation Authority and $100,000 to SFMTA to support the Neighborhood Transportation Program, or NTP. This request would fund staff to work with supervisors' offices, implementing agencies, and community stakeholders to identify, develop, and support delivery of projects under the Prop L NTP. And last but not least, we have one Prop AA request from Public Works for about $2.3 million to support construction of the Various Locations Pavement Renovation Number 90 project. So this would fund pavement renovation of 46 blocks, construction and retrofit of 29 curb ramps, and all related sidewalk work and traffic control at locations in districts 7, 8, and 11. The full list and map of locations is in the packet materials, and this request does include an amendment to the Prop AA five-year project to reprogram this amount from the project that it's currently programmed to, which is the Brotherhood Way, Holloway Avenue, and Lake Merced Boulevard pavement renovation project. The Brotherhood Way, Holloway Avenue, and Lake Merced Boulevard project has a conflict with a future Public Utilities Commission water project, so that's been pushed into the early 2030s. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. We also have project managers from Public Works and SFMTA available as well.
Thank you so much, Ms. Wally. I do not see anyone on the roster with questions or comments. So with that, let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 7? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, may I have a motion and a second to approve this item, please? Motion by Dorsey, seconded by Chen. Madam Clerk, I think we can take the same house, same call. Okay, the motion's approved, same house, same call. Let's go to item number 8, please.
Item 8, program $5,672,505 in TNC tax funds to the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency for 3 application-based residential traffic calming projects with conditions. This is an action item.
Good morning.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say welcome, Ms. Seberg.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Melgar. Good morning, Commissioners. SFGov, I am sharing my slides. This presentation is to program $5.7 million in TNC tax funds to SFMTA for three application-based residential traffic calming projects with conditions. I'm going to start by providing some background on the TNC tax program, followed by a summary of SFMTA's request for programming TNC funds to three residential traffic calming projects and conditions that we are proposing to help address project delivery challenges. Then SFMTA staff will provide an update on program status, delivery challenges, and next steps towards addressing them. As we are recommending concurrent programming and allocation for three projects, there will be a following allocation item that will go very quickly since we're presenting the background here. To provide some important context, the Prop D Traffic Congestion Mitigation Tax, or the TNC tax, was passed by SF voters and began collection on January 1st, 2020. The tax is a surcharge on commercial ride-hail trips that originate in San Francisco for the portion of the trip within the city, with single-occupant trips taxed at 3.25% and shared trips taxed at 1.5%. Tax revenues are split 50-50 between SFMTA and the Transportation Authority, with the Transportation Authority using funds for capital improvements that promote safety, including pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure improvements, traffic calming, traffic signals, and maintenance of existing safety infrastructure. On the screen, you can see TNC tax revenues from January 2020 through fiscal year 26. As a novel funding source with limited historical data, most of which was impacted by the pandemic, it's hard to accurately forecast, but revenues are on an upward trend. And on the screen, you can see TNC tax funds available to program for projects, which is $7.1 million. Of the TNC tax revenues collected since 2020, the Transportation Authority has programmed $29.1 million to SFMTA's Vision Zero Quick Build and application-based residential traffic calming programs. Of the $29 million programmed through December 2024, most of the funds were directed to SFMTA's Quick Build program at $23.3 million, and the remaining was programmed to SFMTA's application-based residential traffic calming program at $5.78 million. This slide summarizes SFMTA's request to program $5.7 million to three application-based residential traffic calming projects. Item 8 is the programming action, and item 9 is the allocation item, which seeks funds from previously programmed TNC funds. The residential traffic calming program has struggled for many years with timely project delivery, with the application and installation process taking years for simple measures. For the fiscal year 21 and 22 program cycles, there was a surge in applications following the COVID-19 pandemic because SFMTA waived the requirement that applications must include signatures from residents on a block. For the fiscal year 23 cycle, SFMTA had intended to pause accepting applications while shifting from an annual program to a rolling program. However, SFMTA continued to accept applications for the fiscal year 23 cycle without funds identified to implement measures. This volume of applications has led to a backlog of measures that SFMTA needs funds to implement. On top of this, there have been other delivery challenges related to schedule delays, cost increases for labor and construction, inflation, and inaccurate cost estimates. And Sean Kennedy from SFMTA will go into further detail on these challenges, discuss lessons learned, and outline the plan for addressing the backlog in the next presentation. We have developed an enhanced monitoring, reporting, and oversight protocol in consultation with SFMTA that is a condition of both programming and allocation. This protocol is included within your packet materials for the programming memo. On this slide, we have a few examples of our special conditions included in the oversight protocol. This includes monthly progress reports from SFMTA, and that by December 2025, SFMTA will report to the board on the future of the application-based traffic calming program, which might mean stopping the application-based program and switching to a proactive program where locations are identified by SFMTA. We hope to help SFMTA get on the right path, and we hope to ease up on the protocol as SFMTA clears their backlog. So to get into the actual programming action, the first request is to program $256,000 for design and construction of 28 traffic calming devices at the last 17 locations of the 121 total locations for the fiscal year 21 traffic calming program. These funds would complete the scope of work for the fiscal year program, fiscal year 21 program cycle, which is already funded by Prop K grants for the design phase allocated in 2021 and construction allocated in 2022. All of the residential traffic calming projects in this request are intended to slow speeding traffic and reduce collisions to improve safety and enhance the quality of life for neighborhood residents. Specific treatments include speed humps, speed cushions, raised crosswalks, and traffic islands. Funds are requested to cover cost increases due to design complexities at remaining locations, along with labor and construction cost increases. The second request is to program TNC tax funds for the full construction of the fiscal year 22 traffic calming program, which would fund the installation of 270 traffic calming devices at 159 locations. The Transportation Authority currently has $1.2 million in programmed but unallocated funds. We recommend programming an additional $5.1 million to meet SFMTA's allocation request of $6.4 million. The planning and design phases were funded using previous Prop K grants, and treatments include similar types of devices as those I mentioned in the prior slide. And the last request is for $275,000 for programming of design funds only for the fiscal year 23 traffic calming cycle. The total scope is to design approximately 80 individual traffic calming devices at 40 locations. SFMTA began design using their own one-time source funds, so this request will cover remaining design of improvements recommended for the fiscal year 23 cycle, which is 30 remaining locations. And with that, I could take any questions. We'll now have Sean Kennedy from SFMTA present on the traffic calming program. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have some questions for you, but I think we will have Mr. Kennedy present first. Welcome, Deputy Director Kennedy.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Melgar. Stumbling over words already. And commissioners, Sean Kennedy. I'm the Chief Planning and Implementation Officer here at the SFMTA. I'm joined by Damon Curtis, who is our Traffic Calming Program Manager, as well as Kimberly Leung, who is our Director of Livable Streets. So with that, I am going to give an overview, some background on where we are with our traffic calming program, and kind of go over some lessons learned, next steps as we look toward coming out of this with an even better and stronger and hopefully quicker program in the future. So as you all know, traffic calming is very popular with the residents of San Francisco. We as staff look at it as a very important kind of key cornerstone of how we're delivering safer neighborhood streets. So we're very excited about the program as well. And we're doing that a couple of ways by really paying attention to and trying to slow down mid-block travel speeds, as well as protecting pedestrian safety at uncontrolled intersections. We do that in a couple of different ways. I think our three biggest ways are speed humps, speed cushions, and raised crosswalks. And we've got kind of some variations here shown on the screen of those three main ideas. All three are very effective and have been proven effective in slowing travel speeds, especially at the mid-block. We have a couple different buckets and ways that we deliver these elements to the city of San Francisco. One is our proactive projects and programs. These are through other specific corridor level projects like Muni Forward, our Quick Build program, as well as Slow Streets, and there's several others on the screen there. But I'm going to talk most of today, and those account for about 50% of the elements that we deliver on the street. The other 50% is based on this residential request program. That process is started by somebody reaching out to us, taking an active interest in putting together an application, saying, hey, look over here, there's some speed issues on our neighborhood street, please take a look. That then kicks us into an evaluation phase where we do some data gathering, including verifying some speed data, as well as traffic volumes, local land uses. If that application is accepted, we then go into the design and implementation steps. This slide shows kind of how those have all played out. You see the green part of the bar is our proactive work, and the blue is the application-based traffic calming work. And you'll see really, you know, FY23 is obviously an anomaly, which is something we're going to talk about here more as we keep moving on through the presentation. Before I do that, just a little bit of background. The traffic calming program started in 2000. In 2013, we switched it up a little bit, went to kind of being more block specific instead of area wide. 10 years later, in 2023, and as was mentioned earlier, we shifted really to a rolling, hopefully a rolling program. The idea was to shift to a rolling program, get improvements in the ground quicker. By looking at applications on a more ongoing basis. That hasn't worked out great to date, and I'll go into more as to why that is here in a minute. That leaves us to where we are today in 2025, where we're proposing a pause to taking additional applications while we clean up and work through our backlog, as well as take a little time out to really develop and make some changes to some of the program going forward, so we can come out of this even better than where we started. I think a lot of the issues started with COVID, and that can be said about a lot of things, not just our traffic calming program. But in March of 2020, we did change our application process, and we no longer required people to get a 50% petition as to even just apply to the program. And because of that, and as I'm sure you can imagine, applications soared. And you know, this just shows that in real time with data. You can notice our blue bars here are kind of what we were projecting to receive application-wise. The gold bars are what we actually received. And so you can see as we approached COVID, we were pretty much spot on with what we expected versus what we got application-wise. And then we changed the requirements, the petition requirement, and basically doubled our amount of applications in 2021. And then in FY22, doubled it again. Meanwhile, you know, not having any additional resources, staffing or funding-wise. I think this then correlates. This is the number of applications actually accepted. And you can see, once again, we were pretty much right on leading up to COVID, changed things, and then ended up with twice as many applications being accepted as we were anticipating. And, of course, no changes to staffing levels, no changes to resource levels. Of course, this led to budget challenges, the increased demand, and the amount of time, staff time, to just go through the evaluation and then design phase, you know, really slowed down and bogged down staff. Additionally, inflationary pressures, both from cost of construction, went up 30% since 2022, as well as staff resource time and staff hours, you know, salaries went up 23% since 2020, and we know they're going to be up at least another 10% between now and 2027. So that brings us to the allocation request, really trying to get us back on our feet and getting working our way out of this backlog that we created for ourselves. And I will say, obviously, this is self-inflicted wounds here. But you know, it's coming from a place of love. We you know, are very excited about this program, and even more excited that people want to work with us to improve safety on their streets. And so we did take too many applications, but now we need to learn from that as we move forward. In order to do that, we really need to clean up the backlog, however. So we're proposing, as was already gone over in the previous presentation, some money in the FY21 cycle for some construction work and a little bit of design cleanup. Then in 2022, we have 270 devices that we've already gone through both the planning and design phase. phase, but do not have any money for construction, so are asking for quite a bit of money to do those construction construct those devices on the street, and then finally shoring up 2023 through the design phase, and really trying to get a solid footing. We think by doing these things, we'll really have a solid footing going forward as we look into 2024, because as I sort of briefly mentioned, and as was mentioned by the TA staff, we did change how we're evaluating overall applications in 2023. Going forward from 2024, we tried to switch to this quarterly based kind of rolling application approval process. The idea was to get things quicker, get them out in the street faster, instead of just looking at them once a year. We have not had the chance to really see that come to fruition, just because we've been so bogged down in trying to deal with the increased applications from 21, 22, and then also 23. So we want to clean up where we're at right now. That will allow us then to really evaluate if this quarterly evaluation system is working and getting projects out on the street faster. And so that leads us to lessons learned. You know, I think the biggest one is that first bullet, which is, you know, right-sizing our application process to resources, not just funding, but also staffing resources. You know, continuing to work on improving the delivery process, and then looking and working with our industry peers. Obviously, we are not the only city that does this. There's a ton of really successful programs out there, including just across the Bay in Oakland, where we're working with them to understand their process and how they do things. And as we take this pause to catch up on the backlog, we're doing a lot of that background work so that when we unpause, and, you know, come out of this period of catching up, we will have a better program, a stronger program, a more efficient program going forward. With that, we have made some commitments to your amazing TA staff, and I do want to take a minute to say thank you to all the support and help that your staff has been, specifically Anna Fort, who's done an amazing job in working with us through these growing pains. But we are committed to doing monthly reports as well as monthly meetings on our progress as we continue down this process of fixing our backlog. And then we'll be returning to the SFCTA in September with an update, and then to this body in December with an update as well, as we look forward to improving the program. So with that, we'd love to take any questions or comments.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Chief of Strategy and Implementation.
Chief of Planning and Implementation.
Great. Sounds good. Yeah. Commissioner Mahmoud.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy, for the presentation. District 5, I know many of the groups are really interested in traffic calming infrastructure improvements, especially given we have some of the highest traffic collision corridors in the city. As you pause the application-based program, have you considered programs based on, instead of proactive traffic calming, instead of reactive, using objective safety measures? I think Department of Public Works does this type of framework. So as you're reevaluating, is that one of the options that you're looking at?
So yeah, everything is on the table as we reevaluate and figure out what is the best program going forward. That said, our application-based program is on neighborhood streets, is focused on neighborhood streets. We do have a proactive, as I noted, we do have a proactive arm, and that's about half of what we do install is coming from the proactive arm of our traffic calming program. And that is an ongoing continual process of doing just what you said on a corridor level. But from a neighborhood kind of like reactive standpoint, neighborhood-based improvements, we've really leaned on working with neighbors after they flag a specific location. But once again, that's back on the table. Is that really the way we should continue to do that going forward? And that's something we will be looking at.
Thank you. Yep.
Commissioner Sauter.
Thank you. I guess my first question is on there was a slide about the toolbox of different treatments. Would you reconsider those options and those kind of tactics in the toolbox going forward?
Once again, everything's on the table. We would love to talk further about additional ideas that you may have, and we can incorporate those.
I see that most of the requests that come down to speed humps, speed cushions, speed tables, yeah. And I think, you know, anecdotally, a lot of those seem to go in, and they seem to be pretty easy to drive around or drive through without much impact. I'd love to see, and obviously, you know, we need to do this in a way that's as easy to construct and as is makes sense financially, but I'd love to see other options in the toolbox as we reconsider this program that get to safer streets.
Sure, and we are open to those discussions. I would just say on the actual numbers, the effectiveness of these elements, they are proven effective. Both speed humps and speed cushions. You know, we do the cushions. There's two options. One is a kind of a five lump, they call them, option, where that's usually on a transit street, so allow muni to continue to go. And then there's a three lump option if it's not on a transit street, but our emergency services highly value that connection. Then we do a three lump option there. All three of those ideas, like a speed hump and the two variations of a speed cushion, reduce speeds quite dramatically. Of course, a speed hump, we go from about 28 miles, at least where we've installed them, we averaged 28 miles an hour. They went down to 21 miles an hour after we put in a speed hump. And a speed cushion, starting at 28 miles an hour, and on average went down to 23 miles an hour. So it is relatively comparable. They do make a big difference and a real improvement to the street, but we are definitely open to looking at additional measures.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I think more broadly on the program, I'm sure you share this, it's quite frustrating that we're in this place. And obviously, I mean, it seems like we lost track of this for a few years, and I'm not sure who's responsible for that, but I think that should be accounted for. I don't think it's a good thing for us to be pausing a program because it's too popular. I think obviously we have financial considerations to keep in mind, but I think it sends a really bad message that we've opened up something, we've empowered residents to take action, and then we're pulling that away from them just as it's getting popular. I think we'll need to find a better balance as we restructure this program. I don't think we should go back to the old way where you're required to get everyone's signatures. I don't think that's feasible. I think that's not a very productive bar. But I'd like to see something in the future where residents have a say, and then there needs to be some support gathered. There needs to be then a filter put through on your side, maybe something closer to what we do with participatory budgeting. I think there's got to be a better way here. But I do think, I don't want us to abandon this. Again, I think it's one of the few ways that we actually give people power to improve things. And I think also, residents can see things on the streets and feel and experience things on the streets that we're not going to see in the data. Unfortunately, a lot of times we only see it in the data after there's been a crash or a collision. And I think, filtering it up through the neighborhoods, we need to kind of continue to have that perspective in our plans as we go forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Sauter. Mr. Kennedy, how did we fund these activities before the TNC tax was implemented?
That is a great question. Damon Curtis notes we funded through Prop K.
Okay. Having been through the MTA's last year long process to look at your budget, I note that parking revenues have decreased as usage of TNCs has increased. So I'm wondering, when did we make the decision to use that tax here instead of for operations of Muni?
To the chair, if I may, Anna LaForte, Deputy Director for Policy and Programming at the Transportation Authority. We have been funding the application-based traffic calming program with the TNC tax since 2023. With the reauthorization of the sales tax in 2022, there were a lot of pressures on the Safer and Complete Streets program. And there was programming decisions made around that time that both the Quick Build and the Traffic Calming Program would be funded, at least in the near term, through the TNC tax revenues, which have been challenging to predict. But this has been with the SFCTA's share of the Prop D TNC tax funds, which must be used for Vision Zero capital projects. So funding the quick builds and the traffic calming program with a citywide influence on proven safety measures has been how the board has prioritized the use of funds in the last couple of years.
Thank you, Ms. LaForte. I just note the irony that we are cutting back service on Muni while the TNC tax has increased, and now we're pausing what we're using it for. So not a good thing. And I look forward to you coming back to this board with a revamped program that makes sense, that is transparent and easy to access, because all of these things together is not a good picture. I agree with my colleague, Commissioner Sauter. Okay, with that, thank you so much. Let's go to public comment on this item, please.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 8? And there is. Okay. Your 2 minutes begins now.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Melgar and Commissioners. My name is Milena Mackey-Cabada. I'm the Community Engagement Manager at Walk San Francisco. I'm here today because more than anything else, dangerous speeding threatens our safety on city streets. The faster a driver is going, the more likely a crash is to occur and the more serious the consequences. We already know that speeding is the number one cause of severe and fatal crashes, but the new speed cameras are showing that far too many drivers are going way too fast. In May, the city's new speed cameras issued nearly 100,000 warnings to drivers going more than 10 miles per hour over the posted speed limit. 100,000, and that's just at 33 locations. San Francisco needs to take on speeding in every way possible to ensure our safety, especially as vehicles get bigger and more powerful. The humble speed bump is one of the most powerful tools available to reinforce safe speeds. That's why Walk San Francisco asked the SFCTA to support allocations for the residential traffic calming projects from fiscal years 2021 to 2023. These will bring needed traffic calming tools to streets where residents are experiencing dangerous speeding every day. It's crucial that the SFMTA deliver the safety projects that residents have been waiting for, and while they catch up on this backlog, it is the ideal time to reform this broken program so it is more efficient and equitable. Boston, a peer Vision Zero city, has reformed its residential traffic calming program and now has a proactive approach, so speed humps and tables are installed faster and more strategically at the neighborhood scale, providing transparency to the community and cost efficiency. We need a similar approach here, so please, commissioners, beyond approving these allocations, continue to ask for a new and improved neighborhood traffic calming program as part of the next era of Vision Zero. Thank you.
Okay, there's no more public comment in chambers. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment.
Okay, public comment on this item is now closed. Colleagues, may I have a motion and a second to approve this item, please? Moved by Dorsey, seconded by Mandelman. I think we can take the same house, same call. The motion is approved. Thank you. Let's go to item number 9, please. And we have Ms. Seberg back.
Oh, item 9 allocates $6,887,505 in TNC tax funds with conditions to the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency for 3 projects. This is an action item.
Hi again. Now that we've approved programming of the TNC tax program, I will present the action item to allocate $6.9 million in TNC tax funds to SFMTA for the 3 application-based residential traffic calming projects with conditions. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I am sharing my slides. As I previously mentioned, this will be a relatively short presentation since we've presented the background in the programming item. This slide summarizes SFMTA's request to allocate $6.9 million to 3 application-based residential traffic calming projects. To start, thank you for approving programming for these three programs in the last agenda item. As a recap, this request is to allocate $255,000 for design and construction of the fiscal year 21 traffic calming program cycle. The first request would fund design and construction of 28 traffic calming devices at the last 17 locations of the 121 total locations for the fiscal year 21 traffic calming program. And MTA hopes to complete the fiscal year 21 cycle by June of 2026. The next request is to allocate $6.4 million to the fiscal year 22 traffic calming cycle and consists of the $5.1 million approved for programming in the prior item and $1.2 million in previously programmed but unallocated funds. These funds are for the construction of 270 traffic calming devices at 159 locations. SFMTA hopes to complete this work by September of 2026. And finally, the last request is to allocate $275,000 for design only for the fiscal year 23 traffic calming cycle. This request will cover design of improvements at 30 remaining locations for approximately 80 individual traffic calming devices. MTA expects to seek additional TNC funds for construction once design is complete. And as a reminder, this allocation request is conditioned upon SFMTA's compliance with the Enhanced Monitoring, Reporting, and Oversight Protocol. This protocol is included in the allocation item in your packet materials. On this slide, we have those few examples of our special conditions included in the oversight protocol, which was approved in the programming item. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Do we have any questions or comments? With that, let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 9? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment.
Okay. Colleagues, may I have a motion in a second to approve this item, please? Moved by Mandelman, seconded by Dorsey. We can take the same house, same call. The motion is approved. Thank you. Let's go to item number 10, please, Madam Clerk.
Item 10, approve a 2-year professional services contract with SiteLab Urban Studio in an amount not to exceed $1,100,000 for consultant services for the Geary Fillmore Underpass Community Planning Study. This is an action item.
Welcome, Ms. Baz.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. SFGov, I'm sharing my slides. Okay, so I'm going to go over a recommendation for a contract award for the Geary Fillmore Underpass Community Planning Study. For some background, this is coming out of a federal Reconnecting Communities grant where the Transportation Authority received $2 million. The purpose of this grant is to address past harms done by transportation investments. So in this case, in the 1950s, when Geary was expanded into an expressway. We matched the grant with Prop L funds and in-kind funds. And when we came for the allocation request for Prop L, we also presented on this item. We are partnering with the planning department. This project is unique in that it's taking on both transportation planning and land use planning to come up with a new vision for the Geary Corridor and to reconnect the Japantown, Fillmore, and Western Addition. We're also working closely with SFMTA. There's a study map or a project area map on the right of this screen, and I want to highlight some of our community outreach. The project will have a unique community council established, which is an application-based community group that represents the Black, Japanese, and Jewish communities that were displaced during the 1950s construction of the Geary Expressway. We'll also be doing broader engagement and have a technical advisory committee. So for our recommendation, we are recommending a 2-year professional services contract with SiteLab Urban Studio. We received 5 responses to our RFP by the May 5th due date, and we interviewed three of those five firms. The contract is for $1 million, and it covers the transportation component, the land use component, and outreach support. We're recommending SiteLab Urban Studios because of their experience in doing kind of this large-scale visioning exercises in San Francisco, and they also have a very local a team that's familiar with the Japantown and Fillmore Western Edition communities. And their contract has a 30.5 disadvantaged business enterprise participation rate. And with a two-year contract, it would expire in summer 2027. And I can take any questions.
Okay, I don't see any questions from my colleagues. Thank you, Ms. Paz. Let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 10? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment.
Okay, with that, public comment is now closed. This is an action item. Colleagues, may I have a motion, please? Mahmood, seconded by Sauter. We have to take the roll on this one, Madam Clerk.
Okay. On the motion to approve item 10, Commissioner Chan. Chan, aye. Commissioner Chin. Chin, absent. Commissioner Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Commissioner Ingordio. Ingordio, aye. Commissioner Fielder. Fielder, aye. Commissioner Mahmood. Mahmood, aye. Commissioner Mandelman. Mandelman, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Vice Chair Sauter. Sauter, aye. Commissioner Sherrill. Sherrill, absent. Commissioner Walton. Walton, aye. Okay. There are nine ayes. The motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk. Let's go to item number 11, please.
Item 11, award contract to five shortlisted consultant teams for a three-year period with an option to extend for two additional one-year periods for a combined amount not to exceed $600,000 for on-call strategic communications, media, and community relations services. This is an action item.
Thank you. Cynthia Fong, Deputy Director for Finance and Administration. What I have before you today is an on-call contract item. We are seeking consultant services in areas of public relations, media relations, public outreach, marketing, crisis communications, event planning, and translations to support a wide range of agency and project-specific matters. Currently, we have an on-call contract with two various firms, and the contract is close to expiring. Therefore, we issued a request for qualifications back in April 18th. Afterwards, we hosted a pre-proposal conference on April 25th. That was very well attended with 53 firms, and I could see that there were firms, both small and large firms, meeting and forming partnerships. In result, we received 10 proposals on May 23rd. A selection panel comprised of transportation authority staff recommended five firms based on their qualifications and other criteria. These firms showed a strong set of skills. They had many specialists and relevant project experience. They all also indicated they would exceed our 17% DBE requirement. In terms of funding for these on-call projects, we are looking to utilize federal and state grants, local agency contributions, and Prop L sales tax funds. This first year of activity has already been included and approved by the board for fiscal year 25-26, and other costs would be included in future budgets. With that, I'm happy to take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Fong. I don't see anyone on the roster with questions or comments. Let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 11? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment.
Okay, with that, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, may I have a motion? Moved by Mandelman, seconded by Chen. I think we have to take a roll on this one. Yeah.
Okay. On the motion to approve item 11, Commissioner Chan. Chan, aye. Commissioner Chin. Chin, aye. Commissioner Dorsey. Dorsey, aye. Commissioner Ingardio. Ingardio, aye. Commissioner Fielder. Fielder, aye. Commissioner Mahmood. Mahmood, aye. Commissioner Mandelman. Mandelman, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Vice Chair Sauter. Sauter, aye. Commissioner Sherrill. Sherrill, absent. Commissioner Walton. Walton, aye. There are 10 ayes. The motion is approved.
Thank you. That motion passes. Let's go to item number 12, please.
Item 12, approve revised debt policy and ratify investment policy. This is an action item.
Hi again, Ms. Fong.
Thank you. For my last item, I have a routine administrative item for your consideration. Today, we are presenting edits to the debt policy and ratifying the investment policy. We typically do this review each year to be in compliance with current government statutes, in addition to transportation authority objectives. We've reviewed these policies with our bond counsel, Nixon Peabody LLP, and KNN Public Finance. After their review, we are recommending four changes to four sections in the debt policy. These changes can be viewed in detail in attachments 1 and 2. We are recommending to provide additional clarity and flexibility and reflect administrative and credit facility changes since our last update, especially by removing some outdated references that we had noticed in the policy. In terms of the investment policy, all is well. There's no recommended changes on this one. This has no impact to our fiscal year 25-26 budget, and I'm happy to take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Fong. I don't see anyone on the roster with questions. Let's go to public comment on this item, please.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 12? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment on item 12. There is no public comment.
Okay, public comment on this item is now closed. Thank you. Colleagues, may I have a motion in a second, please? Moved by Mahmood, seconded by Mandelman, and I think we can take this one, same house, same call. Thank you, the motion's approved. Let's go to item number 13, please.
Item 13, introduction of new items. This is an information item.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster with items to introduce. So therefore, Madam Clerk, let's please go to the next item.
Item 14, public comment. Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 14? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
Checking for remote public comment. There is no public comment.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, let's go to item number 15, please.
Item 15, adjournment.
We're adjourned. Thank you.